All right, so we're continuing on with this great stuff here at Yale 2011 with Kevin O'Neill, who's a mobile developer. So thanks for coming on Channel 9.
Thanks for having me.
So what does it mean to be a mobile developer? What does that mean?
Look, it means that we're concentrating on the devices that are within a few inches of your body. You know, so your television, your computer screen, your television's what, 12 foot away?
Yeah.
Your computer screen's 2-3 foot away.
Mm-hmm.
Your mobile screen is 6-8 inches away.
True.
So more than just being about the fact that the devices are mobile, that I can take it in my pocket and I can go, and it's with me wherever I am,
mm-hmm.
It's about the fact that the device is very, very personal. So these are devices that live with you. I mean, mine is in my nightstand at night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually my alarm clock, right? So I pick it up in the morning, put it in my pocket. It goes with me to work. It's in the docked in the car. It's playing my music in the car or listening to the radio via the phone in the car.
Mm.
So it's the device I have with me all the time. I take that device's places. I don't take my wife. And most of us do.
Yeah.
Right?
So, sure.
You know, these. So a mobile developer is more than... the mobile part of it is less important than the fact that what we're doing is we're these are very, very personal devices. You know, we talked about PDAs 10 years ago. All these really are.
Sure.
You know, PDAs. They just happen to have a radio in it that lets us talk anytime.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I can get a connection to the internet anytime I like.
Totally. And the phone is just an app, right?
Yeah.
Like everything else. Now, speaking of apps, you happen to be an app developer.
Yeah.
And in particular, you're writing apps cross-platform, so Android, iPad, iPhone, blah, 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 so iOS, Android.
Yep.
Windows Phone 7 at some
Windows
point.
Windows Phone 7's coming for us, yeah.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about sort of your history in that space, because now you find yourself programming in Objective-C.
Yeah.
So what's going on?
So I kind of got into the PDA space, the personal space, about 8-9 years ago.
Mm.
I was working for Hewlett Packard at the time. They have a great division out here. They had a great division out here before the Compaq merger that developed... calculators, they were called the Australian Calculator Operations. And I worked there on a PDA, a Java Linux-based PDA, very low soccer mum PDA type thing. Never actually came to market. But I fell in love with these tiny little devices you could have in your pocket. The market was gone. So back to corporate land I went, working on, you know, various server things. And then when iOS hit and I watched it grow, I jumped in an elevator one day. I was working in a big high-rise in the city. Jumped in an elevator one day, and I looked around, and three people were using an iPhone.
Mm.
And I went, this is the time to get back to mobile.
Excellent.
So that week, I quit my job.
Without even investigating the platform?
No. Wow. I quit my job. I spent 3 months just at home nailing this stuff, and then I went off to work for Lonely Planet, actually, initially.
Excellent, man. So you're a big fan of Objective-C.
I am. I was really surprised by that because at the time I was doing a load of Java. And I was pretty good with Java. You know, I could go Java all the way to bytecode. I was incredibly comfortable in that language and the ecosystem around it. And so when I first got over to Objective-C and encountered tools like Xcode, it was like stepping back 30 years in time. You know? It just was horrendous.
Yeah.
But the platforms and the language itself were beautiful because Objective-C does something I think that's unique in the current stable of mainstream languages. And Objective-C, just by the mere fact that it's the language of the iOS, of iOS, is a mainstream language now, right? So when I pick up my code 3 months later, I can read it because all my variable names... all my parameter names are in line in my message send.
Mm.
It's truly message sending. So it's a very... it packages... everything is dynamic at runtime.
Mm.
It sends the messages at runtime. Unlike most object-oriented languages or statically built languages, so we're in C, it's a very static language,
yes.
Right? So it's got types, it's got these things. In Objective-C, actually... is a dynamic language, so there are some fixed types.
Interesting.
But most of the time, you're working with dynamic types. Mm. So you can add behavior to instances that you haven't created. right? So some languages are starting to add those sort of things like traits and
sure,
et cetera.
Yes. Yeah.
Objective-C has had that for a long, long time. Hmm. So the classic example of I have a rectangle, and if I'm using it for area calculations, I've got all these functions about area calculations. And when I go to draw it on screen, well, I've got to go back and open that thing up and start to, you know, add my functions for drawing into it. Mm-hmm. With Objective-C, I would have the basic properties, the basic behavior of a rectangle. Hey, I'm a rectangle, and I've got a height, and I've got a width, and I've got a X1, Y1 type mm-hmm. thing. And then over, I'd add my behavior. How big am I? What's my, you know, total path? What's my, you know, space? And my drawing behavior are separate categories that operate on that, and I can just pull those in at runtime.
Interesting.
So it makes for some very, very powerful things. iOS has been an absolute boom for Objective-C, because until iOS, it was really the language of Mac programming. Right? And Mac programming is a relatively small consumer base. iOS comes along, your consumer base for applications goes through the roof.
Absolutely.
So they've managed to, and so the language starts to evolve. Mm. In the last few versions, we've had things like blocks, which allow us to encapsulate state, pass functions around as first class entities. Mm. Right. So we can capture the external state at the time the function went to run. We can bottle that up, put it away, come back, call it later. So what that means is we can write some more functional style things. So I can take a list and I can process that list, and I've got a list of strings, I want to reverse them all, rather than going for each in this list, create a new array. I can just say, here's my list of strings, map this function block across the top of it and produce me a new list. Nice. So now the functions the way that I apply that is different to what I apply. Mm. You know, and that's very powerful, because now I've separated out how to process these things, so I can decide, okay, I'm actually going to split these up and process them in parallel from what I do when I process them. Right? So the same function that reverses a string can go from having processing each string linearly, right? Or I can drop that same function onto a thing that splits the array into two, puts on two separate threads, and processes those independently, joins it up at the end, and sends back the result. Nice. Now, the function, the block that I've passed in, has no idea that that's happening, right? Because I'm encapsulating what I want to do, my intent, separately from how I go about applying that.
Excellent, man.
So, yeah, there's lots and lots of things in Objective-C. But Objective-C without the Apple frameworks would be a cool language, but Apple do a lot of work to help us as developers really, really take advantage of the platform and the hardware. They provide a very, very consistent set of interfaces, a very, very consistent way of dealing with things. I think the thing I found hardest moving to between platforms was the differences between different devices. Less so in the Win 7, but in particular moving to Android. I could have the same function, I could call the same thing, and I would get a different behavior depending on the device I had. You know, does the device have a GPU hooked up, and is it available to me? I get a really nice little rotational transition. I don't, I get this hard change, which is not what I'm looking for, right? I'm trying to deliver an immersive experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's sort of the cost of having an operating system that can run N devices, right? Like Android.
Yeah.
Whereas the model we've learned with Windows Phone 7 is we can run N devices, but they all have the same specification that we've defined.
And I think that was the most exciting thing. when I looked at Win 7, when we started to investigate working in Win 7, I thought, oh no, here we go, another Android. You know, 30,000 device manufacturers. Every device is different. And here's this list of things all these devices must have. You know, they must have a radio. They must have a screen this side. They must have et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So suddenly you had a lot more confidence about being able to deliver an effective application.
Absolutely.
Right? And you were going to, and most importantly, you get a consistent experience for your consumer.
Absolutely.
Right.
So what is it about app development that sort of that most excites you? I mean, back in the day when you would write an app, what was called an application back then. Yeah. I guess everything's an app now.
Yeah.
But, you know, you write an application, you spend a lot of time on it, you compile, yep. debug, test, shrink wrap, sell. You don't have quite the same connection. I'm asking you, what is this modern experience all about?
So, from a developer? So there's a few things. One is your connection to the consumer seems more intimate, right? Mm. When I even through something as large and as cumbersome as the App Store, I can finish writing the product, put the marketing materials up, have the thing running, have it delivered to consumers, all within a week, mm. right? Depending on review cycles, right? Now, in a traditional sense, I could have built a website and then had somebody go to it, or I could have put some software in shrink wrap. My cycle time is huge. Whereas in delivering for mobile applications, mm-hmm. your ability to deliver new applications to consumers, the whole delivery process is taken care of for you. It's consistent, it's clean, it's beautiful. You know, and so as a developer, one is I can get close to my consumer. Now, the App Store, the iOS App Store is the harshest place you will ever put a product. Mm. No one ever writes anything good. Because it's the cranky people that, you know, write comments.
Okay.
And it's flawed in a lot of ways because you've got no way to respond to that consumer directly.
Sure.
Right? So someone's having a problem, it's really hard to say, guy, I think you've got this, just go and do this and everything will be fine.
Mm.
So you're constantly trying to find new ways to get people engaged in that place. So in a lot of our applications, we actually build in feedback mechanisms outside of the store.
Interesting.
Right? Which actually helps us get closer to the consumer. We do a lot of metric work. So we watch the application as it's running, either by looking at how it's communicating with the back end, so which parts of the back end are being spoken to.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the applications I've done and continue to do are integrated applications. They're an online application. Mm. So we look at how consumers are moving between parts of the application, and then we can fine tune and work with that. And we do a fair bit of that, especially where I am now.
So one of the questions I have, and I've sort of been wondering about since the first iPhone came out, because it sort of seemed like, of course, when the first iPhone came out, there was no app model. You just ran web pages. But what you just said is interesting, because one of the great things about clients and the computer that's in your hand and the fact that you're occasionally connected, like, for example, I'm in Australia,
yep.
and I'm not going to turn my roaming data plan on, man. So that means I can't use certain apps.
Yep.
Now, certain apps, it makes sense because it's all about real-time data. But so my question for you is there a model where you're able to deal with occasionally connected clients? And
a lot of the applications I've done have to deal with constant dropout. I mean, you walk around town, you can go from Wi-Fi to 3G to 2G to no G back to 3G. And your application needs to give a consistent state, consistent movement. And a lot of that is about handling a lot of that communication in the background, caching the bejeevers out of everything.
Okay.
You know, you just cache, and you pretend.
Okay.
You know, you know, there's that old adage that sometimes a pretty lie works.
Sure.
Well, in a number of applications, we do things with progress bars where we know the network's dropping off, and we'll just slow the progress bar a little bit, and we'll sit there and try and get a connection back, right?
Sure.
So there's all sorts of little tricks we can do there, and you have to use them. You have to be aware of the fact that network can disappear.
Mm.
I'm fortunate where I live, I can actually walk around the house and I can get, you know, all four environments. I can go from Wi-Fi connected to 3G connected to 2G connected to no connection. And I can just walk up and down and around the house.
Sure. So, interesting.
Fantastic. Yeah, so you have to design that in from day one if you're a connected application. Mm. There's a lot of applications that are not connected. So there's a lot of applications that will do game applications. They'll record a lot of things about you, so they've got integration with the various game centers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll record what you're doing, and then when they get a chance, they'll upload it. Right?
Sure.
A lot of the applications that I've done have required you. I worked for realestate.com.au for a long time. They're Australia's largest real estate portal, I needed to be able to, when somebody searched for a property, I had to be connected to do that,
yes,
right?
Yes, of course.
So there were certain aspects of the application that that just needed a connection. But things like when they bookmarked a property, although I'd send some sync information back, I'd also store that data locally.
Sure.
So if they didn't have a connection at the time they went to have a look at their bookmarked properties to, you know, show their wife, their significant other, husband, they could, because it was all cached locally. So you have to be aware of it.
Sure. Another question I have for you in this space is the notion of when a user navigates away from your app, what do you do? So in other words, you have to freeze dry your state or
absolutely.
Or what?
So different people take different approaches. My approach has always been that the application should resume exactly where it is. So in my world, that means picking up my state and freeze drying it.
Okay.
And when I come back, I rehydrate it.
Excellent.
So, and even though in later versions of iOS, you could actually be held in memory in the background, and you can do a lot to get held in memory. So, the real estate application I worked on, we spent a lot of time doing things like making sure that when you went into the background, we'd flush all the images out of memory, but we'd keep the application data in memory, which gave us a smaller footprint, which actually gave us a better chance of staying in memory and not having to do the rehydrate.
I see.
Although we did dehydrate as well, because in the background, you can just be killed. You get no extra events saying you're gone now.
Interesting.
Right? You just get killed. Now,
okay.
you don't often get to see the difference between the two states.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So you have to play these interesting games. That's great.
Yeah.
Now let's kind of change and talk a little bit about what you're doing now,
right,
and what you're working on now.
So I was given a really exciting opportunity a few months ago to join a startup organization who are focusing on putting mobile and sport and social together.
Interesting.
So observation was made that a lot of people talk about sport. And more, as we get more and more diverse, they talk about it on their mobile phones. SMSing, hey, did you check the game? Hey, I see your team's losing. You know, want to go to the game this week, those
sure.
sort of things. So the founders of the company thought there's an opportunity there to bring people back together into an environment to talk about those sort of things. But in order, it needs to be more than talking. You have to add something to that space. So initially they gave you a place to talk. So it's about, we pull in lots and lots of sports data. So we bring in all the current, say, NFL games. We've got live scores, we've got live match events, all occurring, where you can go in and view those. But you can also then go to that context and say, hey, send a message to one of your mates, say, come on, we're going to watch the game together, even though you're 2,000 miles apart. We're going to watch the game together, and we'll chat inside of this environment. So now I've got the scores coming through, I've got information coming through, I've got a context going on where I'm chatting. I might be supplementing that with watching the game on TV.
Sure.
You know? I may pull in a bunch of people that I know, you pull in some people you know. So that's kind of interesting, but now let's start taking that one step further. Let's go and add some entertainment around that. So a lot of people have played things like fantasy football.
Absolutely.
Right? Very, very popular sort
very
of thing.
Very popular.
The problem with fantasy football is it goes for a season, right? And I'm just not that committed.
Yeah.
But if I could play fantasy football for the length of a game with five mates, you know, that's something different, right?
I agree.
I can now sort of pick my players. We can have a bit of bragging rights going on. You know, I can try and dump guys who aren't playing so well that day. You know, and you end up with this bragging rights. So now we start to build up a little more social context. So now we've got what I'm interested in. I'm starting to watch these sports. I've got some information feed my mates. I'm talking to my friends. I've got some games going on. And that's just one type of game. Who's going to score the next goal? Those sort of things. Just really simple. And now I've got a leaderboard between me and my mates. Not between me and the world, because me and the world really doesn't matter. Right? We're talking about a small social group.
Sure.
So now I've got a leaderboard between me and my friends. Yeah, I kick everyone's butt at fantasy, but picking the next goal scorer, you know, Charlie down the road kicks my butt.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
We're building a community around that. So part of that evolution is to not only deliver onto multiple platforms, mm-hmm. but deliver a method by which developers can deliver things into that platform.
Excellent.
So what's really important for us is we know we don't have all the good ideas. In fact, we expect we don't have many of the good ideas. Mm. But what we do have is a way of bringing a lot of data and a lot of people together, right, and giving developers a way of interacting with that, interacting with people around sport. So we drink our own champagne, right? So
great.
We build a game. We use exactly the same APIs as we are making available to developers in the short-term future. So developers will be able to build games, build interaction models on top of our platform, and then deliver it out to multiple devices. So you'll be able to deliver that same game into iOS, into Win7, and into Android.
Excellent. So now you guys have both a client API and a server API,
correct,
I'm assuming, and you have a storage story.
Yeah. So we're actually fairly cloud-based, as I think everybody is right now, right?
Yeah.
But the beauty for us is that allows us to, because we have a lot of active monitoring, it allows us to scale that out where we need it, when we need it.
Awesome.
And we, you know, like any startup, we've had our share of false paths, but we're fast enough to understand when things are not on the right path to change.
Great.
You know, stopping and changing is a big part of what we do. Mm. You know, we're constantly reevaluating how we're interacting. One of the reasons we haven't pushed out a developer SDK to this point has been about us just making sure we have all those patterns and all that infrastructure in place and working the way that I think and the other members of the team think developers can take, get, and get good responses on.
Absolutely. And I think one of the other critical things that's very important is the fact that not everyone uses the same device, the same OS, or the same form factor.
Correct.
So you'd have somebody with an iPad. You could have somebody with, lo and behold, let's say a Windows 8 tablet.
Yeah.
You could have somebody else on their, oh my goodness, a PC, and then somebody else on their iPhone, and somebody else on their Windows Phone 7 in this group.
Yep.
That has to work.
Yeah, and each of those people requires a slightly differing experience.
Yeah.
Because if I just take an iPhone application and make it bigger, or I take a Win7 phone application and go and put it onto the Tablet 8, it's not going to work. It's just going to be a bigger application. Mm. My wife, when the iPad came out, thought, well, it's just a big iPod Touch, until she started to use it. Mm. And applications that were actually written for that device, because it's a different experience, right? Mm. The phone experience is very utilitarian, right? It's I need to do this now. Mm. The experience on an iPad is less utilitarian. It's more entertaining. Mm. It's a larger format. It's much more like a magazine. It's much more like a book. I expect to interact with it in different ways just by the fact its form factor is larger.
Sure.
When I get to a computer, I've now lost the intimacy. Mm. You know, a computer's not particularly intimate.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
So I've got a mouse and a keyboard between me and the information. If I'm in any of these other devices, I've got touch going on. I've got movement going on. I've got all sorts of inputs happening that I can actually use to enhance that experience. Mm. Right? And of course, the next step after that is television. Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, how do we, you know, and we are actively looking at ways of how we take this parts of this experience and integrate it with the television, because it makes perfect sense.
Well, I can tell you right now, one good way to consider, if I may, would be Xbox. An Xbox application, make an Xbox Live kind of, you know, these smaller apps, because a lot of people actually are watching television through their Xbox, and when you do that, you're able to interact with games and stuff. So there's a
it's funny. I had my former organization quite an interesting conversation with the CIO, and I made the bold statement that I thought for developers, the Win7 market would be a lot bigger than the Android market. Mm. Now, some of that's to do with the way that devices are given to people, how you buy a device, but also I pointed out, I've got games, I can effectively write the core part of the game and it'll run on my 360, it'll run on my phone, right? Mm-hmm. So now there's a massive advantage to working on those platforms, because when I add a tablet in, I've got all three consumer positions covered. I've got it on the phone, I've got it on the tablet, and I've got it on my big screen of the 12-foot experience.
Awesome.
You know, and I think for someone like Microsoft, that's the big opportunity,
yeah,
is to have that truly integrated space. Apple have been trying for some time with the Apple TV and things like that, but it's still a very, very side thing. I mean, it's a wonderful little device. Mm. It's still a very side thing. I know which I use more, my Apple TV or my Xbox, right? I play with my Xbox.
Sure.
And the Xbox has got other ways of interacting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got the Kinect.
Yeah.
I can play with that, you know, and I can do things with that. It's giving me another form of interaction. It's not touch interaction, but it's a very physical interaction, just like my touch screens and my phones.
Absolutely.
Much better than my keyboard and mouse. Keyboard and mouse?
That's so 2000.
Yeah, it's so naughty, right?
Yeah, whatever. But sometimes it's nice when you're, you know, it's nice to be able to have a keyboard when you have to write your code.
Yeah, it's very nice to have a keyboard. I have tried writing code on an iPad.
No.
It's not a pretty experience, right? Even writing a presentation,
sure,
you know, in a crux, it works. Mm. But let's face it, a keyboard just feels right.
Right on. So the last question I'm going to ask you is about this wonderful event, right? So you've been talking at YAO. We're in Brisbane now. We were in Melbourne.
Yeah.
So what's your take on YAO? What were you talking about here?
So I got involved with YAO as a speaker for the mobile nights. They run a mobile night once a year. And I had did a talk about what it takes to actually deliver products and getting it wrong while delivering products, meeting management expectations in a medium to large size organization. So I got the invite to come here and talk on that in expanded fashion.
Excellent.
Which I was stoked, because I'm sitting here with some of the, you know, the greatest people in our industry,
mm-hmm,
you know, people, you know, you aspire to meet, and I get to go backstage and chat to them, you know. It's fantastic. It's such a rush.
Absolutely.
So I'm here talking about Three Tall Tales is the name of my talk.
Okay.
And really, it's three stories about delivering mobile products. One's an agile story.
Mm.
It's not technical at all. It's just how we used a particular agile hack to deliver, to get a change in a roadmap to deliver some product. The second one is an agile and technical and team story.
Mm.
It talks a lot about the problems, technical problems you encounter as you move between platforms and things like that. The third one is about a testing framework, which I've recently developed at PlayUp, which is the company I'm with now,
mm,
where we've got all these a large application, a lot of complexity going on. How do you go about testing that so that when you make a change, you know it's all working?
Yeah.
And it's actually quite complex in a mobile environment, because in our web environments, we see things that'll go off and test, is this string in the HTML? You know, and that's kind of interesting. But to me, what matters when you test a mobile application is what you can see and what you can touch. So I need to be able to test what I can see and what I can touch. And when it goes wrong, I want to report it in those senses. I want to say, I couldn't see this.
Yeah.
I couldn't touch this. So the third story is sort of about how at PlayUp we've gone about building out a framework to allow that to happen. It's something we're releasing open source, which is, you know, we think, you know, we want to give back in that space. Sorry.
Sure.
And then I end up with a few observations about Great. Mobile development, which some are right, some are definitely going to be wrong, but, you know, you're trying to look a little bit further out. You know, somebody said to me once, I arrived at an organization, I was helping out with their mobile stuff, and they wanted to put a 5-year business plan together. Mm. And I turned around to them and said, the environment I work in didn't exist 2 years ago.
Yeah.
How are you going to put a 5-year business plan for that?
Amen.
You know, so I think it's such an exciting time for us as developers,
yeah,
to be able to work in these new environments, these new spaces. We've got computing power beyond anything we could believe 5-10 years ago.
Mm.
You know, I can go to the cloud and I can put 50 servers, 100 servers, 200 servers to use, you know, for me, without having to invest, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Amen, man.
Which that's I excellent. Did in the noughties, right?
Yeah, of course.
In that first .com, we had our big racks of servers all mounted up for ourselves that were idle.
Yeah. Excellent, man. Well, hey, thanks for coming on Channel 9.
Yeah, thank you.
And we look forward to this play up. It really sounds great, because I agree. I'm not really into the season-long fantasy stuff, but when my favorite team is playing a buddy of mine's favorite team, yeah. I could see how we could have some fun there with the players.
And what's better when he's losing?
Amen.
Hey.
What's up? Perfect. All right, you take care.
Thank you.
Cheers.